From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Death from the Skies by the bad astronomer, Philip Plait. Looking forward to that. Documents recovered from a remote area along the Pakistan border have revealed that Osama bin Laden wants al-Qaeda to launch a global fireball by lighting forest fires in Europe, the United States, Australia, South America, according to WorldNet Daily. The documents uncovered during an operation led by the British intelligence service, MI6, have been described by experts in that agency as the most worrying plot that the world is facing. The catastrophic wildfires would not only produce an environmental disaster, but would stretch emergency services often beyond their limit and leave insurance companies facing multi-billion dollar claims for damages that could effectively destroy the already shattered economies of a number of countries. Doug Hagman, Homeland Security U.S., on the line with us right now. Doug, this story that broke in WorldNet Daily, how much credibility do you give it?
George, quite a bit. As a matter of fact, it was on your program, your very show, back in 2004 that we first talked about this very topic. In 2003, we started seeing directives posted on internet forums, instructional posts, to terrorists in this country and in Western countries to actually start fires inside the U.S., Europe, and Australia. And we must remember, Georgia, al-Qaeda leaders are historians. We've seen instances where they have pointed it to California in World War II, for example, where the Japanese launched thousands of balloon bombs. In fact, one such bomb was found in Hayfork, California, back on February 1st of 1945, where it landed atop of a dead fir tree after it drifted over the Trinity National Forest. In that case, the balloon bomb actually made it to the United States, blew up, and started a small fire. It was an incendiary device. Now, they often point to these instances on their forums, in their communications, and their directives. Everyone's looking for the big one, the large attack, while we're actually experiencing thousands of paper cuts, for example, although I wouldn't call these paper cuts. Consider the fact that last year, California, the fires in California, cost more than $1 billion in lost property.
And Douglas, how do we know those fires, or even the ones that they just had in California, weren't deliberately set by someone from al-Qaeda?
Well, that's true. We know that the fires in Southern California last year, specifically the massive Santiago Canyon fire, which caused $10 million in damage, it was indeed arson. There was an arrest, one arrest made. However, there were several others that were caught taking photographs of fire stations and taking pictures where they shouldn't have been taking pictures and acting strangely. And they were described as appearing to be of Middle Eastern origin, perhaps, in some cases, and in other cases, acting as if trying to hide their actions. Indeed, we're looking at situations here where the fires such as this, what they're trying to do is, of course, really hit us when we're down and to exhaust and exacerbate the problems that we have already here inside the United States. And look for this to be taking place in the Western countries, in Europe, and in Australia.
All right, very good. Thank you, Douglas. Douglas Hagman's website, Homeland Security U.S. The FBI has issued a high-priority warning that such a terrorist plan could devastate states like California. The Federal Reserve has announced that it will provide up to $540 billion in financing to bolster the money market mutual fund industry, its latest effort to get credit flowing more freely again. The Fed's new program, called the Money Market Investor Funding Facility, will be used to support a private sector initiative designed to provide liquidity or cash to money market investors. The Fed plans to back purchases of short-term debt, including certificates of deposit and commercial paper that expire in 3 months or less, from money market mutual funds. With little relief in sight, people are getting more anxious about the slumping economy and how it affects them. The share of people who believe the country is moving in the right direction has plunged in just a few weeks from 28% in September to 15% in October. And at the same time, there's an incredible drop in those surveyed who say that they are happy about the way things are going on in their own lives. Now 59% say they are personally happy, compared with 70% last month. In a moment, Dr. Judy Orloff joins us, so we talk about this study of public anxiety. The number of women committing suicide has increased dramatically over the past decade and is driving up the nation's suicide rate as a whole. According to a new study, the rate of suicide in the United States has risen for the first time in a decade, and for once, middle-aged women are being looked at as the reason for driving that increase. Swapping fried and salty foods for fruit and veggies could cut the global incidence of heart attacks by a third, according to a study of eating habits. Researchers analyzed the diets of 16,000 people in 52 countries and identified three global eating patterns. The typical Western diet, high in fat, salt, and meat, accounted for about 30% of heart attack risk in any population. A prudent diet high in fruit and vegetables lowered heart risk by a third. Our expert on the ticking heart, researcher and author Christian Wild, with us right now. What do you think of this study, Christian?
Well, that's an interesting study. I believe that's the Inner Heart study. And what they found is exactly what you said, that those who ate fruits and vegetables, very much like what the American Heart Association recommends to us in the United States, five helpings of fruits and vegetables a day, warded off some of the results of this high-fat Western diet. You know, George, if we went to any one of those cities in any one of those countries, we'd find waiting for us a McDonald's, a Burger King, a Jack in the Box. So yep. We have exported some pretty bad habits to the rest of the world as far as eating is concerned.
Christian, all people have to do is follow a very smart diet. And I've got to tell you, read the work that you put in Hidden Causes of Heart Attack and Stroke and follow that, taking turmeric and other inflammatory herbs and supplements, and they're going to be way ahead of the game, aren't they?
They are. But if you take this back to the beginning, heart disease in America was almost non-existent in 1900. 8% of all deaths were attributable to heart disease, which was about 3,000 people a year. Now, if we fast forward to 1950, then it becomes 30%. In 1960, 500,000 heart attack deaths a year in this country. So you got to say to yourself, well, wait, what happened after 1900? 1910, something called Crisco came into our kitchens. Remember Crisco?
Oh, yes.
Hydrogenated trans fatty acids. And it was welcomed by the consumer. It was welcomed by the food processing industry because suddenly, when they prepared cakes and pastry and donuts, they didn't go dry or stale overnight. So they could stay on the shelf of the grocer for a week, and then we bought them and took them home, and they still maintained some freshness for the next few days. So everybody was happy about it, but that was trans fats that went into our diet. And not till the 1990s did it ever even get labeled, so we never knew. One of the big contributors through all these years has been the trans fats.
What's the new stories in the upcoming newsletter?
Just found that people with heart failure, studies have shown turmeric can reduce the size of the enlarged heart. It's very good for melanoma. To all the Nuriites out there, I have to tell you, we're very grateful to you. We were totally overwhelmed with the results from the last show, and we have personally returned 1,337 phone calls, people asking for information, and we posted a place to get your turmeric on the website in case anybody wants to find it.
Well, Christian, we've got a massive audience, and I want to keep it that way. I want people alive and well.
I know you do, George. You're doing your part.
Yep. MyHeartBook.com is Christian's website. Is there a toll-free number, Christian?
866-STEM, S-T-E-M, 123. And again, it's www.MyHeartBook.com.
Great. Thanks. Christian Weil. A large chunk of metal plummeted to Earth from the sky and crushed one side of a car in New Jersey. The 20-pound piece of metal was found next to the vehicle, which was parked at a U.S. Postal Service mailing facility. Jersey police believe that it simply fell from a passing plane. Nobody was hurt. Scientists have better maps of distant Mars than the moon, where astronauts have walked, but India hopes to change all that with its first lunar mission. It's Mooncraft in ancient Sanskrit, launched from a space center in southern India early Wednesday morning in a two-year mission now, aimed at laying the groundwork for further Indian space expeditions. So here they go. If you get up to the coasttocoastam.com website, take a look at the incredible feature story, the astonishing audio and video claimed to be the most important images of a UFO ever filmed. If you look even closer, they say it depicts aliens. I'm not sure, but you've got to read the story because even a major UFO group says that this looks pretty darn authentic. The pictures are up there at coasttocoastam.com. In a moment, Dr. Judy Orloff joins us as we talk about this recent study about stress and anxiety in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, if you're feeling stressful, we're going to keep Dr. Judith Orloff around next half of the hour here for you to take your phone calls. She's a medical intuitive and board-certified psychiatrist, author of the upcoming book, Emotional Freedom, which I do believe has been published now. She's also the assistant clinical professor of psychiatry at UCLA, has a private practice in Los Angeles, and here she is. Judith, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you, George?
Good to talk with you. Emotional Freedom, is that book out yet?
It's coming out in the next few months. It's about how to transform negative emotions such as fear and worry and anger and everything that everyone is feeling about the economy and how to transform that into more positive states and not be brought down by the energy of negativity, which can be so intense.
It is everywhere. People that I have known who normally have great energy, tremendous karma, they're losing it, Judith. They're simply losing it. They're not the same kind of people. What is happening to them?
Well, you know, we live in a world that's permeated by fear and negativity. And what I've seen as a psychiatrist and an intuitive is that many people are like sponges. They're like energetic sponges, and they absorb the negative emotions of others and also negative emotions from the news into their own bodies. So they're going crazy. They're very tense. They're, you know, very anxious. They're getting depressed. They're getting depleted because they're all taking it on. And I think what we have to do to achieve emotional freedom is to really turn our attention to what's more positive and not get sucked up into the seduction and the vortex of negativity. From an intuitive standpoint, negativity is really a loud signal, and so our attention goes right to it. And so that's why we have to really be mindful and shift our attention from all the negativity, because it's just everywhere. It can really bring us down. And I've seen, as you have, you know, many people who are just suffering enormously from taking this on.
70% last month seemed to be happy. Now 59%. It's dropping. One-third of the people are worried about losing their jobs. Half of them fret that they'll be unable to keep up with their mortgage and credit card payments. 7 in 10 are anxious that their stock and retirement investments are losing value. It's all over the place. And then there's also distress, Judith, about, you know, the possibility of not being able to afford unexpected medical expenses, children's college. People are being bombarded on a day-to-day basis. How do they pull themselves back from this?
Well, there's a reality element, of course, to what's going on, and there's a real reason to be upset. But what we have to do is make a commitment not to lead a fear-driven life, and we have to really bring ourselves back to the moment, back to the now, and to just look at what's in front of us today rather than catastrophizing. Because what I've seen with my patients is that people are catastrophizing about losing everything and what's going to happen in the future. And to deal with fear, if you really want to be a warrior and deal with fear, you can't do that. That's a seduction. You have to try to stay in the moment, try and deal with solutions in what can really help you feel better in the moment, rather than going down with fear. I mean, fear is everywhere, and I see it as a major spiritual lesson for everybody here on Earth, is to learn how to deal with fear. And we're given a great opportunity to do that in this day and time. Now, if you can see emotions as spiritual teachers, in a sense, in that they can be the beginning for transforming fear with courage, because What I say in emotional freedom is that we need to be able to see fear as the impetus to transform it into courage. And that's the great lesson for all of us, no matter what we're going through.
With your psychiatric practice, have you ever seen a time where so many people seem to just be on edge?
No, I really haven't. In 20 years as a psychiatrist, I have never seen anything with the intensity of what is going on now. There are so many people who are depressed and anxious and losing it, and every day fear going around in their minds more than ever. And so for that reason, I mean, I think that's true for us, you know, on many, many levels, but for that reason, we have to learn how to breathe, center, come back to ourselves, and really begin to not be seduced by fear or worry, to begin to cultivate more of a, you know, in the moment, in the now mentality, and also spread positive energy everywhere you go. We need it more than ever. I mean, if people are dropping like flies because of fear, then that network that's holding everything together, the goodness and the intuition and the loving network that we all have, is going to break up. And so regardless of what's going on the outside, I mean, even, you know, with my patients who are under financial stress, I suggest tithing, even a little bit, to create that energy, that positive energy of abundance going, so that people don't get into hoarding, frightened, small mentality. You know, for emotional freedom, the idea is to rise above any emotion and to try and be bigger than it is, even in the face of very realistic problems such as the economy. I mean, I have never seen anything like this before with my patients or in the world.
What about somebody who is holding on, but they're bombarded by negativity, people who are toxic around them? What do they do about that?
Well, you know, these are the emotional vampires. You know,
yes.
These are the people who can suck you dry if you don't really stay aware of it, because they're all over.
I mean, we talked about them 3 years ago when you were on the show, I think.
We definitely did. And in this book, I have gone on to talk about more and different kinds of emotional vampires, because I think we need to be aware of them so we don't let them suck our energy. And now, with all this fear going on, I mean, they're just coming out of the woodwork, because people are so susceptible. It's when somebody is afraid, then they get into victim mode. And then the emotional vampires go in for the kill. They can sense a victim a mile off. And so if you're able to shift that even a little bit, and you're able to say, all right, this person is draining my energy, I'm not going to allow it. There's enough going on in the world. I don't need somebody in my life draining my energy. It takes awareness. And I'm so happy that you've spoken about it, you know, on your show as frequently as you have, because it's really an issue that people need to be aware of in order to be free. Otherwise, the emotional vampires, the people who are victims or controllers or criticizers, they just come out of the woodwork, and you need to learn how to recognize them and say no to them.
Well, you know, we monitor the pulse of people, Judy, and you know, it's just, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to look around and see that people are stressed to the max. I mean, I saw a girl, she was pumping gasoline here in St. Louis today, and you know, she had like $2 to put in the tank, and you could just see the frustration, because that's less than a gallon of gasoline.
Right.
I mean, you could just see it on her face. And you know, this is happening to millions and millions of people, and I think that in spite of all this junk everybody's faced on a day-to-day basis, they can pull out of this. It's not easy. As producer Tom sends me a text, and he says, you know what, it's tough when you got to pay your gas bill and your credit card. That is tough. It's not easy, but you shouldn't let it destroy you and pull you down, right?
I agree with you, and I hear that a lot, that it's not easy. Well, my feeling is, and I'm not lacking compassion here, my feeling is, so what? There are so many things that are difficult, but we can't let that stop us. No, not only do we have to deal with the reality elements of the economy and everything, like the woman you just described who's pumping the gas, my God, you know, we can so empathize, and that just, you know, really tears my heart out to hear that. But at the same time, there's another level of reality from what I see and how we're experiencing life, and we need to look at every challenge as a spiritual challenge to tap into our intuition and become more emotionally free.
Let's help some people tonight, Judith. We'll take phone calls. Plus, if you want to share your stories with us about how you have witnessed people who are just stressed to the max, what you may have seen, call in. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, it's called Death from the Skies, Ways That the World Will End. The bad astronomer, Philip Play, joins us for a complete program on Coast to Coast AM. When we come back, we'll take calls with Dr. Judith Orloff on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, we're with Dr. Judy Orloff, and we're going to take your phone calls as we talk about public anxiety on economic items just intensifying these days. I guess other countries must have the same problem. What do you think, Judith?
It's a global panic that's happening now, and there is fear everywhere. And all the more reason that we really need to bond together as a global community and come together and have dialogues and not lead a fear-based existence and try and join together to try and solve this. It's so important. The only hope we have of solving this is to do it from a calm, centered place and to enlist the help of everyone around the world. We can't do it alone. And we've been so dominated by fear and negativity and secrecy, we have to really begin to, you know, open up in a different way so that we can reduce this panic and anxiety, because panic spreads like wildfire. And so somebody has to be the calm one. And the only hope we have of creating this is for each individual to begin to exhale a little bit and to see it as the work of the individual is to spread that kind of light and to spread that kind of calm, even in dire circumstances. And I feel very strongly about that. In order to transform negative emotions, each person has to be a hero in their own life and make this commitment. Otherwise, fear is like passing fire to a scarecrow. It just keeps burning up, and it keeps, you know, incredibly spreading around the world, and we can't have that. And so somebody has to make that shift. And that's what I'm suggesting, that even in the circumstances of our world, that as individuals, if we're able to breathe and center and come back to ourselves and say, I'm going to deal with this economic stress and this fear on a moment-to-moment basis, and I'm going to do the best I can, and I'm going to support the people around me to do the same, then we could begin to change the energy. Otherwise, the negative energy is so dark, and there's so much dark material and projected darkness and fear everywhere, it just gathers steam, and we don't want that. We want to shrink the dark and build the light, and it starts with each individual, no matter what crisis we're going through. And the economy is a huge one, but I believe, George, that it is one that will bring us all together as a planet, and I think there's some positive energies moving now that have a chance of really blossoming and creating something better for the world, but we have to kind of burst the boil and see where the issue is and then come together again.
And people need to make a plan too, Judith. They need to make a plan, a realistic plan, and make it happen.
Yes, absolutely. With the economy, and to just do what they can day by day, minute by minute, to better the situation and to not catastrophize, not get into the future, and to practice everything that people have been talking about for years in terms of their spiritual development. I mean, now we've got to really put it to the test. I mean, sure, you can get blown away by fear and thrown off and start a panic, but what good is that? I mean, the spiritual challenge of today's living in today's time, and, you know, I believe we're all blessed and chosen to live in today's history. And we have a chance of changing things in terms of how we deal with fear, how we deal with negative emotions. And this is our opportunity. I see this as a great spiritual challenge, the economic crisis and what's happening in the world. I see it that way, as opposed to being a victim of it and just thinking about how horrible it is, how miserable you are. I mean, yes, it's hard, and yes, you know, we're all going through hardships, but we can look at it as you know, the Chinese have the crisis as opportunity. We have
all right
to begin to see it that way.
They're all lining up here for you. First-time caller, we've got Derek in White Bear Lake, Minnesota. Go ahead, Derek. You're on.
How you doing?
Good.
Hi, Derek.
Good. I have a question, actually more of a, yeah, it's a question. I'm curious about the emotional vampires. I work in the music industry, and and I seem to be surrounded by a lot of negative people because, if, as you know, in the music industry, it's hard to actually make a buck. And I was wondering what are some characteristics to look for in people that would be characterized as an emotional vampire so I know what to look out for and who to steer clear of so I can progress myself as a moneymaker in the music industry.
Oh, great question. One of the emotional vampires I talk about in Emotional Freedom are the narcissists. These are the me, me, me people. All they do is talk about themselves and what is best for them, and they have no empathy, and they really can't, you know, be of any help to you unless you go along with their agenda. And in the music industry, there are narcissists everywhere who are totally self-absorbed. And so it's important to recognize who they are and really lower your expectations. And the thing is, when you're dealing with these people, instead of letting them suck your energy out of you, you need to really lower your expectations. And when you talk to these people, you have to frame it in terms that will benefit them, unfortunately. That's the only way you can really move forward with that. And then another emotional vampire is the victim, somebody who just sees themselves as poor me all the time.
All the time, yeah.
And drain you and suck your energy just right out of you if you listen. And so it's important to learn how to set boundaries with them and to say, no, I'll only listen for a few minutes, but also to practice the shielding technique where you visualize light all around your body when you're around a victim or someone who's really negative. You visualize light around every inch of your body as a protective shield, and that negative energy can't get through to you and drain you. So that's a really potent technique that you can try.
Let's go next to Mike in Clearwater, Florida. Great area, Michael. Go ahead.
How you doing, George?
Good.
Question I have is I've noticed that a lot of people, you know, like when you go to local restaurants, you just don't see that many people eating out anymore.
Yeah.
You don't see that many people in the supermarket. And what I told your producer, I don't mean to brag, but I am very fortunate. I mean, we're not millionaires, but, you know, we're not hurting either.
Right, right.
And I find myself stopping myself. The other day I was going to make a rather large purchase. I was going to go into a store and get a brand new computer, which cost a pretty penny. And I said, wait a minute. You know, there's people that can't put food on the table, and here I am about to spend, you know, $2,500 on this thing. And I felt guilty. I just could not get myself to do it. And I just ended up, even though I could plenty afford it and it wouldn't hurt me to do it, I still just could not bear myself to get it and walk out. And your producer, apparently I told him about it, and he said, well, he understands that same feeling. But, you know, I don't know. It's kind of scary. Are we ever going to get out of this? Or
Now, that's a double-edged sword, Judith, because on one hand, I can understand how Mike feels.
Yes.
And he holds back. He feels sympathetic to other people. On the other hand, if he spent the money, which he can afford, wouldn't that help the economy a little bit?
That's an excellent point. That would help the economy. But I can tell from, you know, from him that he has a huge heart and that he's extremely
yes.
compassionate.
Absolutely.
And that's what's happening, of course. I mean, haven't we all felt that in the sense of buying something and yet, you know, having a conscience of what's going on with other people? You know, I think that's one level of it. But also being able to help the economy, being able to do something positive for yourself if you feel okay about it, you know, I think is also a very constructive thing. And so, you know, we have to put the money back into the economy. That will help, you know, so many things. And so it's a balancing act, but I certainly understand what this caller is saying, because it just breaks your heart to think of everyone, you know, who can't afford anything now. And it's just what's happening. And I think, you know, you have a big heart, and I commend that.
Let's go west of the Rockies. We go to Shannon in Washington. Go ahead, Shannon.
Hello, George. What occurred to me when I heard the story about the person at the gas pump, really frustrated with, you know, only $2 in their hands.
Yeah.
What I would be tempted to do is to just pull $2 or $3 or $5 out of my wallet and hand it to them. If I'm in a little better place, then I would want to pass that abundance along. And I think if we each think in these terms, you know, if we're a little better off, which fortunately in this time I am, but I've been where that other person is.
Absolutely. I think that is so beautiful, what you just said, to pass the abundance along and to help each other. You know, what I do sometimes is I just leave money on the street for people to find. I mean, I think it's really important, you know, small amounts of money, $5 or $1, just to spread that around and just to create more of an attitude of abundance, even in this, you know, atmosphere of fear and people who are, you know, in such hardship. I really, really commend what you just did, what you suggested.
Thanks, Shannon. Next up, let's go to Mitch in New York, New York. Mitchell, go ahead.
How you doing? I'm fine. Great to be with you. You know, this has happened to me a lot. I experienced the death of my mother, and I looked into the abyss, and I returned from it a much spiritual person, and to realize that to use myself as a greater good to mankind, you know? So if those people said, pass it around. I found $10 in the street. So what I do, I went to the store, bought some food, and donated to a food pantry, you know? And we have to look positive. Even if you're in a bad place, just keep the faith. And see the spark of the divine in each person, you know?
Yes, see the spark of the divine in everybody and try to help when you can. And that creates more positive energy in the world, and it creates more emotional freedom. And when you see somebody hurting, you listen to them or you try and do something to help, not to put them down or demoralize them in any way, but to really just be respectful. You know, if somebody, you know, is going through a hard time, you can, you know, instead of sharing expensive gifts or sharing gifts on birthdays, you could just say, you know, this year let's do something a little bit less expensive and just, you know, be with each other or whatever. But to be able to honor where people are at emotionally and financially and like what you just said, to do what you can and just keep the faith. It's when we keep the faith that's like a bright light in the universe. When
absolutely.
We can keep the faith, it's a beautiful thing. And if we can all do that, we can keep that light shining.
Let's go back to New York again. Caroline, you are up with us. You're on with Dr. Judy. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to echo the beautiful sentiments that you are, the callers, and you are all saying, and suggest that we turn away from this rampant consumerism that's just eating us all up. And, you know, use our precious, hard-to-get funds to help truly help each other. Here in New York City, we have a performance artist. His name is Reverend Billy, and he has something called the Church of Stop Shopping. He goes around, and, for example, when Apple has a new product coming out and there's 300 people waiting in line for it, he'll go and do an exorcism, you know, and preach anti-consumerism and, you know, using our funds, you know, in more positive spiritual ways. I don't have a responsibility to go out and buy things to save the whole friggin' economy. We have responsibilities to ourselves and to each other. And to, you know, we're not getting the help that we need from the politicians. We need to, you know, take control over how our funds are being used. And, you know, I can't go to Washington and tell them, you know, what to do with every penny, but I can certainly choose how to spend my money in spiritual ways that are going to help people. And I love what you said about, you know, leaving little gifts around, you know, where people can find them. And, you know, if you have a little extra money, you know, go out and buy something for a food pantry or, you know, something like that. If you know someone who's just had a baby and they're, you know, having a rough time, you know, give them things, you know, something like that. Use your money that way.
Judy, there's a lot of compassion out there.
There's a lot of compassion out there, and there's also a lot of sense of that we're all one human family together, and I think this is the great lesson. Once we can really feel that and know that, I mean, as an intuitive, you know, what I've sensed for such a long time is that there's no such thing as a stranger, that we're all related as human beings here. And just with everyone who has called in tonight, I mean, you can see that great heart that's out there, you know, and the light that's out there, even in the face of this crisis. I mean, this is what conveys true hope, you know, the callers tonight and what we've heard. I mean, this is the hope out there. This is the great beauty in all of us that the best can be brought out in us, even in this great time of crisis, and that we can give where we can increase spirituality and we can give for the good. And all this is, you know, in the face of the darkness, look at what is coming up. I mean, this is, you know, great hope to me.
Let's go to Detroit, Michigan. Michael? Hey, homeboy, how are you, Michael?
Great. How about yourself, Mr. Norrie?
Good. All is well.
Thank you. And I'd like to say I find your show very entertaining. I've been listening for many years.
Thank you.
I'd like to preface my statement first off by saying, though, that I can't understand why people would have a problem in tough economic times. But I have never felt any emotions towards anyone, ever. I don't feel fear or any of that stuff. I am not well-to-do. I do not have lots of money, but I'm able to pay my bills and, you know, live a semi-comfortable life. But I don't understand how people can let it get to them. Maybe I'm just an oddball or something, but I honestly do not feel emotions towards anything or anyone.
All right. Now, how do we come? How do you handle that one, Judy? Thanks, Michael. Listen to
your
statement on the air. Yeah, he sounds happy.
Well, then there's nothing to be done. He sounds that he is in balance with himself. The only thing is, there's the whole world out there, and there's the issue of empathy with other people and what they're feeling. I mean, he might not be upset. You might not, if he's still on the line, he might not be upset, and I can respect that, but other people are really hurting. And there's something about, in terms of humanity, feeling the hurt of other people that can bring us together. And he may not want to do that, but I think it creates deep compassion in us. And the more compassion we have, the better off I think this world will be.
Okay, next up, let's go west of the Rockies. We'll get a quick one out of Elizabeth. Hey, Elizabeth, go ahead.
You. I Good. Have a quick question for Dr. Orloff. I wanted to know,
sure.
How do you know the difference between when you have overcome fear or when you're just disassociating?
Okay, that's a good question. Fear and intuition? Is that what you're asking, the difference between fear and intuition?
No. How do you know when you've successfully overcome a fear or fear in the moment from when you're, like, just totally disassociating?
When you experience some kind of courage. Because when you triumph over fear, the small fears and the large fears, you feel an exhilaration where you feel like you've risen above it. Whereas dissociating is just detaching from the issue. It's not actually taking a sound, positive stance to overcome fear. When you're afraid of economic insecurity, let's say, and that you take one step to feel more courageous that one day, and you can feel a lifting of energy. It's a very powerful thing to overcome fear. Every time you do it, it's a huge thing, and it will exhilarate you as opposed to detaching, you know, or dissociating, which isn't the same kind of positive exhilaration or triumph that you feel. But, you sound like you're very in touch with overcoming fear and that you're very capable of doing that.
In a few months, Dr. Orloff's book, Emotional Freedom, will be out there at the bookstands, and I think it'll help a lot of people. Of course, in a few months, we may need about 50 books like this, Judy.
Yes, and it's on Amazon now for people if you'd like to order it, so it is available.
Excellent. Judith, thanks again, and keep in touch. And you know what? There's always a sunnier day, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, no matter what is happening. And I love your show, George.
Thank you. We'll be back in a moment with a bad astronomer. He's really not bad, but that's what he calls himself, Philip Plait, on Coast to Coast AM.